Well, we have a very exciting program ahead of us. After Apollo 14, we have three more major Apollo flights to the moon. I say major because we have a change in the missions for these remaining three flights. Beyond Apollo 14, the flights of Apollo 15, 16, and 17 will carry with it a roving vehicle, a little car, electric-powered, which will give us a range of about 50 miles on the surface of the moon and give us an opportunity to stay on the surface of the moon twice as long as we have here with Apollo 14. We'll be able to carry more instruments, cover more ground, and place more scientific equipment, and generally spend more time doing our traverses and our scientific reviews of the surface of the moon than we've been able to do previously. As you know, on Apollo 14, a lot of the time was spent on actually walking to the various areas that we wanted to investigate. And with the rover, we'll be able to do that in much shorter time. We wish we had more Apollos. We've had budget problems, which caused us finally to make the very difficult decision to cancel first one and then two more Apollos that we had had in our stable. And we're now down to three more flights after Apollo 14. The last of those flights will be in late 1972, Apollo 17, and will carry an array of instruments that are quite different than those that we've been carrying on Apollo 14 and previous flights. For example, the last flight, Apollo 17, will carry two new, very interesting experiments, one for deep sounding of the surface of the moon with a low-frequency radar, and another one where we're going to run a gravimeter experiment, which, if successful, may show that gravity comes in a wave form, much as light or sound or the other cyclic waveforms that we're used to.
That's to confirm the existing theory about the gravity waves?
To confirm the existing theories of gravity waves. The Earth is too noisy to run such an experiment. The moon, being as quiet as it is, has the opportunity for us to run that experiment under much more nearly laboratory conditions. That then completes the Apollo program. And
excuse me, before we go on beyond the Apollo program, I see that in 15 you are already planning to use a so-called sub-satellite that
yes.
is going to move
yes.
a bit.
What? Okay, let me get back to that. The other differences for our flights of Apollo 15, 16, and 17 as compared to previous flights is that we are able to carry in those vehicles an array of orbital science experiments, cameras, radiometers, the equipment that we can bring into lunar orbit with the command module, and while the LEM is on the surface of the moon with the rover, we'll be operating a large array of scientific experiments in orbit about the moon. Incidentally, we also have in that vehicle a sub-satellite, we call it, where we will leave a satellite in orbit about the moon after we go away from the moon and come back to Earth. So here we will be leaving on the surface of the moon experiments that will last for perhaps 3 to 4 years after the last of the lunar flights, and we'll also be leaving in orbit about the moon experiments that will last for a considerable length of time after our completion of the Apollo program.
And what comes next?
Beyond Apollo is Skylab, and here we move back to observations of the Earth and solar experiments. We have in Skylab a vehicle which is capable of carrying three men for 56-day duration flights, and we expect during Skylab to place in orbit about the Earth at about 210 miles altitude a vehicle 22 feet in diameter and about 40 feet long, where man can now exercise his capabilities in space. We have three visits of the Skylab planned, one for 28 days, to be sure that man can operate at zero gravity for that length of time, and then two flights at 56 days. Emphasis on the first flights will be in the medical areas to, under conditions of zero gravity with plenty of room to move around, we're going to learn man's capabilities in physically in space and learn what he can do in operating experiments and observing the Earth and operating these solar telescopes for periods of first to 28 days. Then, in a second flight, we'll bring a solar astronomer along on the flight and operate the Apollo telescope mount, which has a series of solar experiments. Incidentally, I think very important for understanding our source of energy to Earth from our conditions above the atmosphere of the Earth. And then finally, the last 56-day mission, where we will emphasize Earth resources activities. We'll be able in that operation to use man's capability to look down at the Earth and see what we can develop in the way of experiments that can lead to operational systems for support of man on Earth. And it is a trend of our program to be moving in the direction of more Earth orbital activities, first in science and then in applications. Applications being those areas where we actually believe that we can use near-Earth space for Earth observations that can help in our whole problem of environmental control of the Earth.
You don't plan to return to the moon then, at least for a while after the Apollo program?
No, the Skylab program will last until 1974, and then we expect, because of our funding problems, to have a very large gap in manned flight operations. The trend of our activity now is to move more towards the economical use of space, reducing the cost of operations in space, and reduce not only the transportation cost to space, but reduce the cost of experiments and operational satellites that we use in near-Earth orbit.
Shuttle?
The shuttle program is the new and, I think, revolutionary device that we have coming that can reduce the cost of operation in space. First, it will reduce the cost of transport to space by probably something like a factor of 10, because the shuttle flies to space much like our regular boosters today, with a vertical takeoff and rocket-powered operation into space. But then in re-entry, it comes back much like our present Apollo, but then flies like an airplane to a landing field and lands. So we don't throw away a booster each time we go to space.
That means two vehicles. And
two vehicles are involved, a booster and what we call an orbiter. The booster flies to about 40 miles altitude and then comes back through the atmosphere at about 12,000 miles an hour, slowing down to subsonic speeds and flying like an airplane back to a landing field. The orbiter then, after the booster takes it to 40 miles altitude, continues rocket-powered into space, into orbit, altitudes of from 100 to about 600 miles altitude, and will operate in space and then re-enter, much like Apollo, and come back and land like an airplane.
They both have separate crews then, I think.
They both have separate crews. They also, of course, the tremendous advantage of the shuttle is not in its reduction in the cost of transportation to space, but the terrific flexibility that we'll have with respect to placing and returning satellites from space. Obviously, if we can return satellites that have been in orbit and refurbish them to use them again, we can save a tremendous amount of money. We think that we can get tremendous advantages out of servicing scientific experiments, for example. Sensors are being developed at such a tremendous rate that if we can go to space and replace sensors in, for example, a space-based telescope, we can extend the life of that telescope for many years and extend its capability over a period of years to a place where we can use a basic lens system and continue to improve it and we think show, again, great savings in operations in space.
When do you expect the first shuttle, at least the first experimental model, to fly?
Well, the shuttle program will start with horizontal flight with turbojets, much like an airplane flight test program, and we think we'll get into our first horizontal flights in about 1976. That means that our orbital flights, our next man in space after the Skylab program, will probably not come before 1978. So we have about a four-year gap in manned space operations. I'm extremely disturbed by that. I believe that this country does not really want that to happen. But our budgetary situation at this time appears that we have no other choice if we are to press forward towards these low-cost operations in space that are required, that we believe are required to continue to expand man's capability in space.
Now, shuttle would serve also as a transition to the space station. oriented.
Yes. The shuttle, of course, basically is just a new way of operating in space. The opportunity to come back from space gives us the opportunity to take material up and back from space at low cost. And when we have that capability, we can then start economical use of the space laboratory, like a space station, where we can take scientists and equipment up, leave it in orbit, use the equipment in orbit, bring those scientists and their results back, take operational equipment for Earth resources or Earth observations into space, leave it there for long periods of time, say up to 6 months, for example, and operate with the shuttle to a space station in an economical fashion. That's been one of the deterrents in the past to a space station activity, because it is expensive to take equipment up and back from a space station. When the shuttle comes in, the space station makes sense. So we believe that a space station, a permanent space station in orbit with capabilities for science and applications, Earth resources, manufacturing activities, will begin in the early 80s.
Do you anticipate any international participation for the...
Yes, I do. We have a very active program now discussing ideas with the Europeans for a post-Apollo program, and there's been a great amount of interest. The shuttle in itself gives such tremendous opportunities for low-cost operations in space that it has attracted great interest by the in the European communities, and we, in fact, in the next few weeks, are having another series of discussions with the Europeans as to their possible cooperations in elements of the shuttle itself, possibly some participation in an experiment module that could be carried by the shuttle, or other parts of a post-Apollo program where European participation could complement the shuttle and space station program.
Including possible mixed crews?
Oh, certainly. I think that there is one of the beautiful things about the shuttle, I think, is that it gives us the opportunity to take scientists into space. The shuttle operates at accelerations of 3 G's and lower, so that people do not have to have special test pilot training to be able to fly the shuttle to space. This gives us the opportunity to bring scientists with their experiments into space, and gives us the opportunity to mix crews with the Europeans to operate in space programs.
One more question. Looking in your crystal ball, what do you see in the 80s? Are we going to send men to the planets? Do we have the or will we have the capability to do that?
I think the world has the capability to go to the planets, but I don't think the 80s is going to be the time. I think that the we will be consolidating our programs in the 80s. The use of the shuttle, not just for man in space, but for the economical use of space for man, will be, I think, the theme of the 80s. There will be a time when man looks outward again and decides that he wants to explore the universe. That time will come, but I doubt if it will be in the 80s. I think it will be closer to the end of the century.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.